So a couple of these shots, this the launch abort system, we flew about 5 years ago. What's fun about this is the rocket motor, this motor is a 500,000-pound thrust motor, but it only burns for 5 seconds. But it has enough energy to get the 20,000-pound capsule off of the launch vehicle at the ground and a mile up and a mile away if there was an explosion on the ground. While you're doing that, you got to control it. What Apollo did was just have some pitchover motors that they kind of just fired and it kind of went that way-ish. Well, we've got a controlled flight that, this is really cool. This is a solid rocket motor inside a can, and the first thing that happens, it's got eight thrusters around it. The first thing that happens is these valves open enough, like a pressure regulator in your hot water heater, to keep the pressure at about 2,000 pounds inside this tank. And then the guidance system directs the valves to open and close to direct the thrust in a direction that you want to guide the vehicle. You can get up to 7,000 pounds of thrust in the lateral direction. And then we use that all, and then at the end when you're all done or in a normal mission, this is what's called the jettison motor that pulls the whole system off when you're done. But this is all of them together. This was out at White Sands about 5 years ago. It takes off so fast at about 10 Gs, the camera doesn't keep up with it. You can see that abort, the control motor up at the top, changing its thrust direction. So it'll tilt the vehicle over, turn it around so the blunt end is forward, separate the launch abort system, and then deploy the parachutes and land. So really a remarkable safety feature so that if anything went wrong with the launch vehicle, which is the most energetic phase of any mission, we can save the crew. So that's a big human factor safety issue. And I think with that, what I'll do is turn it over to Susan. And so this is the vehicle, anyway, we flew it. And what we're developing to be able to go do these complex missions going forward. And Susan will talk to you about the constituents of those flights.
Thanks, Larry. Okay, good. So I wanted to talk to you tonight about what it's going to take to integrate a crew into the Orion spacecraft on the EM2 flight and then for exploration onto Mars. Our EM2 spacecraft is slated to fly in the 2021 timeframe. EM2 is exploration mission 2. That'll be our first crewed flight of Orion. That vehicle is being designed to fly four crew for 21 days. There's a lot of complexities that are involved in taking a crew beyond low Earth orbit. So we've spent a lot of the last maybe 40-ish years of NASA's human spaceflight history flying humans in low Earth orbit. When they're in low Earth orbit, we have the capability to bring them back very quickly if something goes wrong, if there's a medical emergency, if something happens with the spacecraft itself. They're roughly 45 minutes to an hour away from home. When we're looking at going beyond Earth orbit, we're really having to face the reality that to keep the crew safe, we have to accept that they could be as far as 6 or more days from home. So it really drives the reliability of the systems that many more things have to be highly reliable as well as autonomous. And we also have to design crew survival systems that will allow us to keep the crew alive until we can get them home. So Orion has the capability to keep a crew alive in an unpressurized spacecraft to bring them home for 6 days from the far side of the moon. Some additional challenges of going beyond Earth orbit, farther than LEO, really have to do with how the spacecraft itself is designed. So many of the functions and capabilities for the flight crew really are very scalable by how long the crew is going to be in the spacecraft and how long we need to sustain life for them. When we fly crews back and forth to low Earth orbit, they're typically going to low Earth orbit to dock with a vehicle that provides most of their crew health and life and habitation functions. And so because of that, we're only providing the capabilities to keep the crew alive for short durations for these taxi flights. Orion's completely different in that it's a completely self-contained vehicle, particularly on these early crewed missions, and we'll have to provide all of the capabilities for the crew for the entire duration of the mission. So really what this drives is it really puts a significantly bigger demand on the design of the spacecraft to ensure that the crew has enough oxygen, has the food that they need, has the ability to scrub carbon dioxide out of the environment. Certainly more propulsion is required, more drinking water. This image that I'm showing here kind of gives you a rough scaling of what a flight to space station would be like, which is a LEO flight, compared to something like an EM2 mission, which would be a, you know, 2 to 4 crew, 21-day flight. And it really gives you a sense for, with a small vehicle like Orion, the challenge that it is to ensure that you can provide all of these consumables to the crew. Of course, Larry mentioned quite a bit about the reentry speed. That's a huge difference that we have to protect the crew from the significantly faster and hotter reentry. And I'll talk a little bit more about it later, but of course, protecting the crew from the radiation environment. The radiation that they'll be exposed to beyond low Earth orbit is significantly higher and a bigger health risk than what our space station crews face today. So how far is Mars? Let me see if I can get, okay. Looks like it's working on your screen, but not on mine. So this is an image that gives you just kind of a very rough, almost cartoonish visualization of how far away Mars is and how the orbits of the Earth versus Mars compare. It will take us roughly 6 months to get to Mars, but of course we'll have to time it. As you can see here, there are times in the orbits where the planets are very far from each other and times where they're very close. But even when we time it, as you can see at the bottom of the image, for them to be as close as possible, we're still looking at a 6-month transit there. Of course, time on the surface and allowing the planets to come and realign and then returning for 6 months. So it's definitely, it will be a huge engineering challenge, period. It'll be a huge challenge for the vehicle design, but it will be an even bigger challenge for what it takes to sustain human life for that long of a duration. Okay, so what are some of the biggest challenges for sustaining human life in exploration? So there's many, many, many physiological changes that happen as a result of reduced gravity. We see significant bone loss in the crew. We see cardiovascular dysfunction, muscle loss, fluid shifts. Our bodies are designed for a gravity environment, and so in microgravity, the natural fluid system shifts up to our head, and our body is really not designed to know how to deal with that. Many balance issues that the crew face whenever they're in microgravity for extended periods of time. We do have means by which we mitigate this today. A lot of this is mitigated via exercise. We have orthostatic garments, like a G-suit, basically, that helps with crew return. But the longer that crew members are exposed to this microgravity, the greater a lot of these health risks are. We're doing a lot of research on the space station today to try to understand these risks better, to try to assess the effectivity of some of our mitigation systems. We have a very capable and effective exercise system on ISS today, but it's also very large, so it's not something that would fit in Orion today. So looking at smaller, more compact exercise systems that we could use for the crew for exploration. Radiation is, of course, a big concern for crew health. The crew will be exposed to both galactic cosmic radiation as well as solar particle events. On the early Orion missions, as well as significant more radiation as we go towards Mars, there are things we can do to help shield the crew, and we're designing the vehicle today to provide as much of that capability as possible. But we're also looking at also understanding better what really are the long-term health effects. Are there other mitigations other than physical shielding, be it pharmaceuticals or any other options to help really lower the crew's risk of cancer? That's the biggest risk that the crew faces with radiation. Isolation and confinement. Mars mission, like we saw on the previous slide, is going to take a very long time. So looking at what are the psychological effects for the crew and what can we do to help with team working, what can we do to help keep them connected to their families back on Earth, how does it affect their sleep? We see lots of sleep disturbances in long-duration spaceflight today, and of course there are physiological effects of sleep disturbances as well as many performance concerns and issues. So what can we do to help mitigate that prevent some of the negative sides of isolation? Looking at autonomous medical care. So for EM2, it's only going to be probably at most a 21-day mission. So the likelihood of a medical event with the amount of pre-screening that we do is relatively low, and we'll be flying, you know, medical kits and things like that for the crew to be able to take care of themselves. But the longer durations we go, the more we're going to have to provide a system by which the crew can take care of themselves completely, take care of each other, without the ability to return to Earth. On EM2, we do still have the ability to return the crew if we had a major medical event. Like I mentioned before, worst case, we're probably about 6 days away. But when we look at a Martian mission, return won't be one of the options in a major medical event. So ensuring that they have a medical system that's completely autonomous. Little things that you wouldn't think of, like medication expirations. Most of our Earth-based medications today are not built so that they maintain their effectivity for as long as we'd be gone to Mars, particularly when exposed to radiation. So are there ways that we can extend the shelf life of pharmaceuticals and their effectivity to cover the entire time period of Mars? The closed environment that the crew will live in. So we spend a lot of time, especially with a vehicle as small as Orion, we spend a lot of time looking at the vehicle layout and exactly how much habitable volume does the crew have, and where should things go so that the crew can use them as effectively as possible and even just have enough volume to perform their basic tasks. That'll be even more important when we're going on to Mars, of ensuring that they have enough volume for both their psychological health and for performing tasks. There's also things like being sure they have the proper oxygen levels, that we can keep them normoxic and that we're not exposing them to any kind of hypoxia. CO2 is a major concern. We've learned a tremendous amount on space station about the health risks associated with elevated CO2. Our normal space environment exposes crew members to CO2 levels significantly higher than what we experience here on the ground. And we've never really thought much of it. We've studied it and assessed it and tied it to things like headaches, but we're finding more and more research via the space station that helps us understand that it's being tied to things like ocular damage and potentially other health impacts. So we're now really focused on lowering the CO2 immediately, like on the EM2 mission, and then particularly for longer missions. And we'll, of course, have the same challenges that we have on space vehicles today of waste management and hygiene and feeding the crew. And then, of course, last but not least, once they get to Mars, we need to ensure that they have all the systems in place that they can be productive. So a Martian suit that will allow for mobility on a rocky surface. They'll need tools for collecting rocks. We'll need to be able to protect them from the weather environment of Mars, from the toxicity of the Martian soil. And we'll need to be sure that whatever mission planning we've done is done in a way that it can still be effective when they are, you know, more than 6 months away from the last time they've been.